some people may not know this, but everything you see is light. Your eyes detect light. That's all they detect. So everything you see is just light. Yes, they're solid objects, but that is still because of the way light hits it and then gets to your eyes. Now, light is a very important topic, and for some of the topics I want to talk about today, I think it's a great place to start, especially considering we want to talk about the sun, the stars, and a little bit about, eventually I'm hoping to talk about, why the Earth is blue. The Earth's atmosphere is blue, that is. So, to start off, light is a, well, light, but in physics, there is something called a force carrier or a boson that kind of, there's a special thing that light is called. Now, it's part of the electroweak force, and it is in the form of a wave. There is the whole particle-wave duality, which I may talk about, but the important thing is that an electromagnetic wave makes up light. Now, this is called a specific thing. What is that called? Turns out that light is, the way light is transferred is through something called a photon, which is kind of like a wave, and it's kind of like a wave packet and contains information in it. Now, this is where you've probably heard of the light spectrum. Where you hear, everyone's probably heard about the different waves. You got radio waves, microwaves, cosmic rays, gamma rays, X-rays, infrared, ultraviolet, and visible light. This is all different wavelengths of light that are all part of the electromagnetic spectrum, which is carried by a photon. Now, a very famous scientist won his Nobel Prize for him figuring out some very important properties of these photons. Who was this scientist, and in what year did he win his Nobel Prize? Well, it turns out that the Nobel laureate that came up with this whole idea was none other than Albert Einstein in 1921. It was with his theory of, it is his theory on the law of the photoelectric effect. All about the photoelectric effect. Now, this whole idea was that it was kind of helping to solve the whole particle wave duality, where people asked, is this light packet a particle or a wave? As back in that time, much of science and physics was everything's a particle or something's a wave, but they already established that things were particles and not waves. So they had a big issue, and Einstein helped solve this issue. Einstein used a very important theory by another famous, prominent Nobel laureate. Now, this kind of said that you can calculate kind of the way light interacts with things. For example, something comes in, hits something else, and bounces off. Or it can emit an electron. Basically, it says that when you hit an atom, something comes off an atom. And that there's a certain energy associated with it. It's the whole idea of the conservation of energy, which I'm sure most people have heard about at least a few times in their life. Basically, there's something called Planck's constant, which is a defined constant. Now, before, I was talking about our friend, the electromagnetic spectrum, which has a certain wavelength. Now, it also has a certain frequency. Now, before we go on to back to the photoelectric effect, I'd like to take a quick break to talk about what is frequency. What is it? Well, frequency, for those who aren't familiar, means how many times something happens in a second. One hertz is one time a second. 30 hertz is 30 times a second. 60 hertz is 60 times a second. And it's the inverse of the time. So if you had something that was 60 hertz, it would be 1 over 60 seconds for one cycle to happen. So basically, the time period it takes is the inverse of whatever it is, which means you just bring it to the negative 1 or make it into a fraction by 1 over that number. Now, this frequency can be associated to the certain types of light. And if you multiply this by, well, the Planck's constant, you'll get the energy of that photon. Now, this is important because this is kind of the basis of a lot of modern technologies. It kind of explains how we see. It explains, you know, how certain types of light work. There is a lot of applications for this. But basically, the simple idea is a light wave comes in, hits metal, an electron bounces off. And I'm drastically oversimplifying this. As in one of my second year physics courses, I took like kind of a few courses relating to light or optics, and we also did stuff on modern physics, which also involves this. And I'm just drastically oversimplifying this, as again, certain concepts of this video will require at least a little bit of knowledge about the way light works and interacts with things. Anyhow, basically the photoelectric effect is that whole idea, and close to that. Now, this manifestation of the electromagnetic spectrum as a photon is important not just on our planet. The sun we see, the distant galaxies, heck, even why the sky is blue, or why the northern lights happen, can all put to photons and the electromagnetic wave spectrum. This is why I need to do this quick background on physics. This is not an easy topic, and so I suggest if you do not understand and you'd like to know more, look it up online. I'd eventually like to do maybe my own thing on a YouTube video eventually about it, but for now, I just want to talk about some interesting facts about our universe. So, light in the electromagnetic wave spectrum can be put off to most things. And also, when I'm talking about the electromagnetic wave, light being one, I do mean the same electromagnetic wave that causes magnets to work and allows electricity to flow. It uses similar concepts to that. Now, before we started looking and asking why is the sky blue or anything about the sun or the universe, we used to look on Earth and figure out how can we see these things, how can we study them. And like I said, that is where the field of optics came from. Now, optics is a very interesting topic, as many people think it just pertains to, well, lenses. Now, using some pretty interesting math, you can talk about lenses. But I just like to quickly mention, the reason we know so much today about things is mostly because of Galileo and his invention of the telescope, and many after him, including Newton. Sir Isaac Newton made a very important thing where he would talk about optics. However, he spelt it with a K instead of a C. One of his famous books was written on optics. This helped lead to the whole way everything changed. Now that we have a basic background of physics, I think I'd like to start with the basic idea of how long it takes the light to travel from the sun to the earth. Now, from the sun to the earth is so many thousand kilometers, and it's a pretty big distance. But for light to travel to there, we also got to remember that light has a set speed limit. Now, for those who don't know, light cannot travel faster than a certain speed. No matter how hard scientists try, nothing in the universe can travel faster than light. Light is the fastest thing in the universe. Not a single thing can go faster. Now, this is in stark contrast to what many people think about in movies when they see, you know, warp time at several times the speed of light, which is very unrealistic in the modern world, at least as far as we know. Now, for light to travel that far, we got to take into account what its speed is. Now, I'd like to ask the question, how fast is light? I just want an approximate answer. As, again, an approximate answer is close enough. If I had an exact answer, it would be a lengthy and not nice number. What it is approximately is 300 million meters per second, which I believe is about 300,000 kilometers a second. But that's just quick in my brain math, so if that's wrong, I'm sorry. But 3 times 10 to the 8 meters per second, or 300 million meters per second, is how fast light travels. So 300 million meters is how long light would travel in a single second. Now, how far is the Earth from the Sun? Turns out it's approximately 151.53 million kilometers. So that is quite a bit. Now you also got to remember that that's in kilometers. So you got to multiply that by 1,000 to get meters. Now the question is, how do you calculate that equals a certain number, which then can be transferred into how long it takes light to travel from the Sun to the Earth? So, how long approximately does it take for light to travel from the Sun to the Earth? Well, turns out it takes about 8 minutes. Now, for those who don't believe me, pull out a calculator. Do the math. Even though I know what it is, I still did the math for fun. That's how long light takes to travel from the Sun to the Earth. Now imagine all these distant galaxies. When scientists use the value of light years is a distance. And 1 light year is how long it takes light to travel in a single year. That is, remember, takes 8 minutes to travel from the Sun to the Earth. That is an infinitesimally tiny amount compared to a light year. 151 million kilometers isn't even in the same realm. It is amazingly large for 1 light year. And some galaxies are many light years away. But we're going to take a quick musical break, and when we come back, we'll explore how scientists, astronomers, and physicists can figure out what these galaxies look like, and even how far they are away, knowing, you know, that light takes so many light years to get here, and how does that light even survive? So we're going to take a quick music break, and when we come back, we'll explore this more. Stay tuned and we'll ask a quick trivia question before we go about the song we're listening to. The song we're about to listen to isn't exactly about the science of the sun, but it is a very upbeat song to help us out during these treacherous, unmatched times with COVID-19. This song is very upbeat and had a cover by Dolly Parton. Originally written by Katrina and the Waves, and it's a very well-known one. It was released in 1985 on their album. What is the song? was Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves. So here it is on CILU 102.7 FM. Welcome back. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. I'm Joshua with It's Pretty Trivial. Wasn't that song just great? I feel much better hearing it knowing that I'm walking on sunshine. It's such a good song to just remind us that everything's great. And check the weather for this week. I have been for the last few days. Weather's beautiful outside, so it's a good time to get out. I know that everyone's kind of upset with COVID and all, but to be honest with you, I think it's a great time to get outside and do some gardening, do some yard work, just sit outside and read a book or watch a TV show. I'm sure people have something they can do outside. I know I just finished my garden, so before we get back into trivia, I just wanted to say it's a great time to remind everyone, get some fresh air. It's such a beautiful, it's supposed to be a beautiful week. A few days of rain, but you know what? It's supposed to be warm all week, so try and get outside. Anyhow, let's get back to some trivia. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about some basic physics and how long it takes the light to get from the sun to the earth. Now that we've finished talking about that, I think it's a good time to get in at least to the basic of how and why the sky is blue. This is going to be a drastically oversimplified version, as it is very complicated. And some of the ideas of this are not easy to explain or dumb down. But it's because of a certain type of scattering. Now, what is this scattering called? It's Rayleigh scattering. And I hope I'm pronouncing it right, but it's Rayleigh scattering. And this British, I believe he was a British lord, actually came up with it in the early 20th century, probably like late 19th, early 20th century, when most big advances were made. Now, this is because of Rayleigh scattering, but there's a reason that it works. So, basically what it is it refers to the scattering of light off molecules of air. And it can be extended to scattering from particles up to about a tenth of the wavelength of light. It is Rayleigh scattering off the molecules of air which gives us the blue sky. Calculated that the intensity from this scattering, the scattering intensity from certain scatterers is much smaller than the wavelength to be. Basically, it's saying that there's certain types of relationships that make it affect other types of molecules and particles more. So basically, kind of like how we were talking about before, is that, well, once the photoelectric effect says you have something comes in, have a light wave, it comes in, hits the surface, and then an electron can leave, or another photon can leave. And that photon, and that means that there's an energy transfer. And again, certain wavelengths have a different energy depending on certain parameters, which means light can be scattered differently. Basically, what happens is there's a really interesting phenomenon. Basically, it is, well, it's a type of scattering where basically the blue scatters in a way that's easier for eyes to see and easier for people to see. What I'm trying to say is that Rayleigh scattering, it tends to enhance short wavelengths, i.e. blue and purple and green, whereas high wavelengths easily don't get scattered as well. Basically, the way it comes in, the shorter the wavelength, the easier it scatters. And because this blue light scatters very well, the sky color turns out blue. But say, for example, the relationship was different and for some reason it favored longer wavelengths. Well, then you get red, or you'd get like an orange or a yellow, because it would be at the other side of the spectrum. Now, this isn't what it is, but at night it is. And there's also something called Mie scattering, which I'm not going to get into, but the thing is to remember is that the other colors of light are still there. They're just not scattered as well. However, when the sun is on the horizon, it can change the way the blue light is scattered. And that's why at night you can have red and pink and all these beautiful colors at night, because the Rayleigh scattering changes enough, and the me scattering and the way the light reflects basically to, well, mean that you get a more colorful sky. It's a really complex, very complicated way that it works. And it depends, I believe the intensity of light is proportional to the inverse of the quartic, the inverse quartic function. So the intensity is inversely proportional to the wavelength to the power of 4. This is really complicated and kind of hard to explain in a video like this, but I really suggest, if you're interested, go in and look up Rayleigh scattering. It'll be a really interesting video, I'm sure you'll find, or explanation I'm sure you'll find, that says why the sky is blue. I definitely didn't do it justice here, but I just wanted to kind of explain at least how to find the information about why the sky is blue, because semi-recently one of my cousin's daughter was asking why the sky is blue, and my mom asked me, as she said, well, you might know, you're a physics student, and I remember in optics we quickly talked about it, but it's such a complex idea. Now, this is sort of similar to why we have the northern lights, or the southern lights, which have what names? What name in the northern hemisphere, and what name in the southern hemisphere? Well, northern hemisphere, they're the aurora borealis, and in the southern hemisphere, they're the aurora australis. Now, what happens is the northern lights are a result of collisions between particles in the Earth's atmosphere with charged particles released from the sun's atmosphere. Basically like a solar flare or a coronal mass ejection. Now, what happens is, well, the way these particles interact with the light, they get charged, and these charged particles will release photons. And these photons create these green streaks across the sky. Sort of similarly to how Rayleigh scattering works. They're not the same, but they have some concepts that are sort of similar. I'm not going to say the same, and I don't want to say they're similar, but an oversimplified version is there's particles in the atmosphere. They end up striking charged particles from the sun, and then release a bunch of colors. Now, people have known about them for a long time. It's just, it was very difficult for them to figure it out. It's known as the sun's solar wind. And basically, with studies, they figured basically that's what happens. Now, basically, these electrons and protons and stuff that comes out of the sun comes to Earth, and, well, sometimes it, well, collides with Earth. Now, for those who don't also know, the Earth has a magnetic kind of poles, the North Pole, South Pole, but the Earth's magnetic field usually deters these high energy particles from reaching Earth. However, sometimes at the poles, they can slip in. And this is why we see the northern lights. Solar wind strong enough, well, it'll go through the Earth's poles and where the magnetic field's weaker. And because those slip in, they then collide with things in our atmosphere. And all of a sudden, you have the northern lights. This is why the northern lights work. We're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsor, and when we come back, a little bit more trivia. I hope you like this format today. I'm more just doing it about things I love, which this is definitely one of them. So I'm just, it's a little more impromptu, and I hope not in a bad way. I'm trying to make it more more passionate, as I love this kind of stuff. I will be back with you in a second. You are listening to CILU 102.7 FM.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship, an inclusive spiritual community promoting a compassionate, just, and sustainable world. Find them online at luf.ca, on Facebook, or at 129 South Algoma, Sundays at 10:30 a.m. The Live from the Rock Folk Festival, bringing the spirit of folk and folk music to Red Rock every August. Keep up to date with upcoming happenings and buy tickets online at livefromtherockfolkfestival.com. The Outpost, Lakehead University's pub, full-service restaurant, and live music venue. Find them on Facebook to stay up to date on all the happenings during the school year, like Tanker Tuesdays and Pub Night Thursdays.
Welcome back. You are listening to CALU 102.7 FM. I'm Joshua with It's Pretty Trivial. If you're joining us from the first half, welcome back. If you just joined us, thank you for tuning in. We are talking about different space stuff today. I'm just going to say space stuff as it's more about the Earth and light and how that works in our atmosphere and how these different space phenomena work. And hopefully in this half I'll talk a little bit about satellites and distant far-off galaxies and more interesting stuff. Less about Earth and more about the beyond. So, stay tuned. Next, I want to talk a little bit about how we can see things so far away. Basically, it works like a regular telescope and like a radio antenna or like a satellite dish. What many people don't realize is a satellite dish is basically a very, very similar to a telescope. It points all the electromagnetic radiation to a single point, the same as a telescope. Kind of collimates it into one straight beam. What many people don't realize is that a radio wave and the visible light you see are the same mathematically. They're different wavelengths and different frequencies, yes, but in reality, they're one and the same thing. It's almost like one has more energy than the other. That's the only main difference. An analogy for it, not a very good one, mind you, would be I have $5, my friend has $10. And we're both still people. One might have more money than the other, but we're both still people. And the one that has 10 might be able to use a little bit more energy. But either way, they still, if I'm buying something from someone, I'm still going to be able to either take the $5 from myself or the $10 from my buddy and in some way extract that from each. And that happens with light. And basically, telescopes take advantage of that. Now, I was saying that not all of it is in the visible spectrum. Many telescopes can detect radio frequencies, infrared, ultraviolet, cosmic rays, microwaves, visible light, all these different types of light they can detect. Now, a lot of these come from many billions of light years away. However, that doesn't mean that the light doesn't make it here. The thing is about that light, though, is that because light takes that many billions of years, millions of years to get here, it means that that light we're seeing is in the past. If we all of a sudden looked up and saw a big supernova in the sky, maybe it's stars bright for a few years. Well, that is something that happened billions of years ago, potentially. For example, I believe that it's over a light year to the center of our galaxy. So the center of our galaxy we're seeing from years ago. Many, many years ago. Our closest cosmic neighbor is, I believe, like a few light years from us, which means that we've seen it a few years ago in the past. Now, using this, scientists can take this in a satellite. Now, you always hear people say, these photos of these galaxies are not real. Why is that? And why is that true, but also at the same time, not true? Basically, what it is they can detect all these different wavelengths of light. And they know certain nanometers are certain colors. 500 nanometers is about blue. 700 is close to, I believe, indigo. The lower end, like, maybe, I can't remember, but basically anywhere from, I believe, like 300 to 700 nanometers or 500 to 700 nanometers is visible light. Well, even if it's small as a matter of 2 or 3 nanometers in the wavelength, we can still detect that. And using these detectors, we can say, oh, well, this is this nanometers and this is that one. And then using that, we can say, okay, well, maybe the galaxy doesn't look like that, but we know that that's probably a red color, and this one's probably a blue color, and they can fill it in like that. So yes, even though you hear those pictures aren't true pictures, they are in a sense, where instead of just taking an actual photo of it, even if it might be in black and white, they still know the values for what wavelength of light that is. It's the same as our eyes. You look at two different blues, your eyes can see different colors, yes, but blues, your eyes just says that's a different nanometer of light than that one. And your eyes can detect different colors. This is how these telescopes do it. Now, they might not be able to color these images in, but they send the data to people who can fill in the blanks. And that's how you get these beautiful artist renditions of what the galaxy actually looks like. They're not a real photo. However, they take the data from it and say, hey, this is going to be, you know, a black, and this is a blue, and that's a purple, and all these different colors. And that's how they make these photos. Now, I was looking up how they made these photos, and what I found is that a lot of these photos, it's more of, they want to filter out certain colors, so maybe they'll make hydrogen blue and oxygen red and sulfur purple. And basically, they'll set whatever the filtering from the telescope gets to that. So they say, okay, here's hydrogen. We're going to set hydrogen to the color red. And then they change everything else in the photo to basically shift it all towards that red color of the hydrogen. But then they do that with the oxygen and the sulfur and the iron and all these colors, and then kind of put them all together, where it's kind of just a colorized map, where basically you can, it's more useful for analysis, as you can kind of see what different types of things are where. But it means it's not the true colors. But still, it is very amazing photos. So when you look at it next time, just remember, the colors you see might not be true, but that is what it looks like, and it probably is some way brilliantly colored, whether in the visible spectrum or not, as a lot of these colors in this photo would not be visible to the naked eye, as many are in ultraviolet and infrared and many others. But I think it's an interesting thing to go through. We've all seen those really, really cool looking ones. But again, it's all just black and white and shapes. Now, talking about light and space, there's something that light can do in space that scientists have to take into account, especially when considering how far something is from us. And that is a certain kind of shift. Now, before we get into that, we're going to take a look at the similar thing, but in a different area. We've all heard the ambulance going down the road where it goes, or like a car, it goes a weird frequency change. You know, you hear the sirens, wee woo, wee woo, wee woo, wee woo. It gets louder and softer depending whether it's coming towards you, going away from you, or whether you're moving towards it and it's moving towards you, or basically whichever the way they work. Now, doing that, you hear, you know, the new, because of the way that sound travels. Now, because sound travels, you know, only at a certain speed, it means that these sound waves that vibrate outwards, depending how fast that is traveling relative to you, can depend how those sound waves get to you. At the front, they're all bunched up. At the back, they're all spread out. So of course, it means the waves are going to hit you at a different time. This is called Doppler shift. And believe it or not, it happens with light. Now, when it happens with light, you either get a red shift or a blue shift, depending whether it's coming towards you or going away from you. Now, again, if it's going a certain speed, then the light changes. And using this, scientists can kind of tell if something coming towards us, going away from us, just by looking at which way the light is tending to go. Now, it depends, because certain things going away would either stretch or compress. Now, if you have a shorter wavelength, you get blue light. If you have a longer wavelength, you get red light. And that is called the light Doppler shift. This can help kind of explain why everything's expanding away from us. And, well, it's the whole idea of one going one way, one going towards, one going against. It's a really interesting phenomenon. It's pretty interesting to think about that light can do the same thing as sound in certain circumstances. Now, again, this all comes partly out of the whole idea of the Doppler shift, but also comes out of Einstein's theories of relativity or special relativity, which actually plays a role in it. Because at speeds, length contracts. Light is always traveling at the same speed, but the wavelength of that light will change depending. And because of that, you get the light Doppler shift. Now, we've talked about light Doppler shift, but there's an even more interesting thing called the CMB. Now, what does this stand for? It stands for the Cosmic Microwave Background Radiation. The whole idea of this is that when the universe formed so many billions of years ago, basically there was certain radiation released. And this is different from most other radiation we have. Now, this cosmic background radiation happened at the time of the Big Bang, or just after the Big Bang. So what scientists can do is they can use it to say, hey, well, let's see where this is coming from, where it originated, how much of it is. And they found a way to use it to date things in a way. This cosmic microwave background radiation is all around us. It's coming into Earth and we can detect it. It's a microwave. We can detect radio waves, we can detect light waves, we can detect these cosmic background radiation waves. Basically, these waves can tell you a lot of things. It is very interesting to think that now we know kind of where it all comes from. And using this, it's helped discuss the whole idea of dark matter and dark energy. And again, the age of the universe at about 13.7 billion years, or sorry, 13.8 if I rounded it. The whole idea of this is that using this radiation, where it comes from, how much of it is there, they can detect this is the center of the universe, or at least our center of the universe, which we technically are, as we can only see in a radius around Earth. But they can kind of see which are the older galaxies, which are the newer galaxies, and using really interesting methods can figure out how old our universe is, how old a galaxy is. Again, this is very complicated stuff, but it's a pretty interesting idea to think about. Recently, I believe it was this year someone won one for something similar to this. The whole idea of the background radiation, cosmic microwave background radiation. Now we've learned about all of this, the sun, the earth, and distant stars. But I think it's time to take a quick musical break. When we come back, I might talk a little bit about light polarization, and then maybe start getting into some stars, and maybe make a teaser of 2 weeks from now. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see. Stay tuned here on CILU 102.7 FM. This next song is also about sunshine, and it's another very uplifting song by Johnny Nash. It's from 1972, and talks about sunshine, opportunity, hope, and the bright future again. And it reminds you that the sun is going to come up again. What is this song? It's I Can See Clearly Now by Johnny Nash. So here it is on CILU 102.7 FM.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. Gonna be bright sunshiny day. I think I can make it now. The pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright sunshiny day.
Welcome back. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. What a great song. That was I Can See Clearly Now by Johnny Nash. Such a great song. I love all these songs today. I've picked pretty uplifting ones because they relate to the sun. And as much as they don't relate to the science and trivia of it, I still think they're good songs to play to lighten the mood up with all this COVID going around and just to help everyone feel a little better. I think they're great songs for that, as they're very hopeful and uplifting, as everyone looks at the sun as this great thing, looks forward to the next day and the nice sunrise that's coming. Anyway, back to what we were talking about. So, we've talked about many different things now, about our planet Earth, our little blue planet, and how blue skies work, how the sun works, how the stars can transmit photons to us. There's one major thing I want to talk about, though, and that's light polarization. Now, I'm sure many people have heard of the term polarized sunglasses. And many people say, okay, well, what does polarized mean? Well, polarization is a much more complicated matter than many people might first expect. When you think of light, most people think of, oh, it's just a wave straight up and down. That's not exactly true. Light can come to us many different ways. And the way light comes in can be different ways, vertically, horizontally, on a diagonal, in a double helix. And because of this, we get light polarization. Now, what does this mean for what light polarized sunglasses do? Well, it turns out that basically what it does is it filters out those undesirable wavelengths. So, you might have something that's circularly polarized, elliptically polarized. You might have something that's, I don't know, vertically, horizontally polarized. Because of the XYZ plane, you can have many different ways that this electromagnetic wave propagates, which means comes through the planet. So, you can create certain filters that filters out certain amounts of those lights. Now, what a polarized sunglasses will do is that's what it will do. You add an analyzer and a polarizer, and basically you can filter out light. And when you're on the water and you see that glare coming back, that's a certain type of polarized light from the sun. And what these glasses can do is they can say, hey, well, that light is not desirable. We're going to filter that out. And it only lights the light pass through that is non-harmful and good for your eyes. But the thing is when you polarize it one way, it means that the light from the other way will be filtered out. Now, this can create a very interesting thing where if you have two pairs of polarized sunglasses, try holding one 90 degrees to the other one. What you'll notice is it'll be completely black. You won't be able to see anything. It's because if you have two polarizers that have the same type of polarization filter, one filters out the light from a certain way. Once it goes through that filter, well, holding that polarized sunglasses 90 degrees filters out the just polarized light, because now the light has to be polarized the exact 90 degrees. But because that light was already filtered out, the only light that can get through is, well, no light. So that is an interesting prospect for why it works like that. Now, why is it that pilots are said to not be allowed to wear any polarized sunglasses while flying a plane? Turns out it's actually because of polarized light. Sometimes if you look at a computer screen or even like the dash on your car, if it's an electronic screen and you wear polarized sunglasses, you'll notice that the light looks weird sometimes, or it flashes, or there's just something weird about it. That's because it can be polarized itself. And because of this polarization, if a pilot was wearing them and, say, turned their heads, they might not be able to see their equipment. But also, a pilot on a plane usually has an already polarized windshield. So now you have a polarized windshield with polarized sunglasses. One, the sunglasses are kind of redundant. You don't really need them. And two, if a pilot looks the wrong way, they're not going to be able to see anything, because that light is just going to get filtered out by the glasses, by the windshield and the sunglasses. It's really interesting to think how that works. Now, in a lot of these examples I talked about before, light polarization does play a role. The only thing is it's a little complicated to talk about and explain. But the simple concept of our polarized sunglasses is that the light coming through gets filtered out in a certain way. And because of this, it becomes a certain, it filters out a certain amount of light. Now, the equation that explains why polarized light cannot, when it's polarized, it 90 degrees doesn't work on it, is because the equation is the intensity of light is equal to the intensity before it goes through times the cosine squared of the angle. Now, cosine of 90, for those who don't know, cosine of 90, which in other words is pi out of 2, is 0. So you don't get any of the light through. That's just an example of the equation. Again, if you'd like more information on this, I've looked up on YouTube. Lots of videos out there, lots of really interesting ones. But again, I would have loved to cover a little bit more in this episode, but I just got little too happy about all this stuff. So I'm just happy that we got all this through. So we're going to play one last song to finish off the day. And hopefully, crossing my fingers, next week we should have a special guest. And I'll introduce him next week when he's on the show, but hopefully I can get that worked out for next week. Cross our fingers. So hopefully this week was good, and hopefully next week will turn out well if I have my guest on, and hopefully you'll enjoy that. But thank you for listening. This has been Joshua with It's Pretty Trivial on CILU 102.7 FM. The next song we're going to listen to finish off the show today is a song about why the sun shines. And it is by a group that basically explains how the sun shines. And I thought, doing my research, what a really funny way to finish off the show, as it will kind of explain why the sun shines and might be pretty interesting. This was written, it's called Why Does the Sun Shine? The sun is a mass of incandescent gas. And this group recorded it in, I believe, the late 1990s, but it was originally written in the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. And it's an educational song. It was written by They Might Be the Giants in the late 90s, or I guess re-recorded. It's Why Does the Sun Shine? The sun is a mass of incandescent gas. Thanks for listening. Here's the song. I'm signing off here on CILU 102.7 FM.
So hot that everything on it is a gas. Aluminum, copper, iron, and many others. The sun is round. If the sun were hollow, a million Earths would fit inside. And yet, it is only a middle-sized star. A huge atom-smashing machine. The heat and light of the sun are caused by the nuclear reactions between hydrogen, nitrogen, carbon, and helium.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Thunder Bay Country Market, keeping it local every Saturday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. and every Wednesday from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. year-round. Stop by and say hi to over 80 vendors who make it, bake it, and grow it in the Dove Building located on the CLE grounds. Sensia Corporate Web Solutions. Log on to sensia.ca for information about locally owned and operated hosting, site creation, and more. The Study Coffee House. The Study is a fully licensed, intimate live venue and the place to get your caffeine fix while on the Lakehead University campus.
CILU now presents Indie Beat.